Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We do more varieties and flavors of cheese than anywhere else on Earth. By pushing the boundaries of what cheese can and should be, find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, December 12th. 2023. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host of Beer Sessions Radio. It's our last episode of the season for 2023, and we come back in January. It will be our 15th year on Heritage Radio Network. The theme of this show is my favorite beer list of 2023, why craft malt is sexy. Let's go around the room, and everyone's going to introduce themselves. Start with Todd.
Hi, I'm Todd Mott. I'm with Tributary Brewing Company in Kittery, Maine. And our flagship beer is a pale ale that we brew with predominantly blue ox, pale malt, floor malt, and pale barley.
Great. Joel?
Yeah, my name is Joel Alex. I'm here with Blue Ox Malt House. We were and soon will be again North America's largest floor malting facility. Traditional floor malting facility, but right here in Lisbon, Maine.
Congratulations. And Tyler?
Hey, I'm Tyler Fitzpatrick. I'm with Lamplighter Brewing Company in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Last year, we sourced about half of our malt from Blue Ox Malt House, grown and malted in New England and Maine. And we're pretty proud of that fact.
That's great, man. And Ian?
Hi, my name's Ian Goering, and I'm with Blue Ox Malt House.
All right, so we all know each other from different parts of the beer industry, but a year ago, earlier this year, March of 2023, Joel, you guys brought together a really cool beer list. It was the Craft Malt Conference in Portland, Maine, long-awaited, and many of our favorite beer bars places was Novari Red. We want to talk about that a little bit, and then we'll also talk with each of you about the role of craft malt in your brewing and the beers that we actually drank that night. And why I wanted to talk about this is that, you know, the last couple of years we've done some great shows with a lot of the craft malt crew, talking from science and agriculture and everything else. But when we were at Novari Res, with all the beers that you guys assembled from the Northwoods, the Lamplighter, the Tributary, the Bellflower. This was sexy beer. This was beer that tasted good and I wanted to drink. And my highlight of the whole craft malt conference was for 3 days, I just kept going back to Novari Res for that beer list. So this is what makes people get out of their house and go to a good bar, go to a brewery and drink and be on premise. And this was just amazing. And I want to tell everyone why these beers are so good, what goes into it. And Joel, why don't you give us the intro about why this was important to assemble this list of beers for the Craft Malt Conference?
Yeah, sure. I think we're definitely lucky that in the last 10 years, this last craft beer conference was 10 years that we've had the North American Craft Maltsters Guild. And it's getting more common to find beer, at least in our area up here in the Northeast, with craft malt in it. But what was really awesome about the Novari Res Blue Ox Malt House welcome event was we just had a lot of beers that were really highlighting what craft malt can be and what flavors and styles it can support all in one place. And you just sort of just said that, so I'm kind of just repeating it, but it was just really awesome to be able to bring together a bunch of beers and that, yeah, that just highlighted malt from specifically, we were focusing on the Northeast. So most of the beers included malt from us, but we also had some of the other craft maltsters represented. Valley Malt down in Massachusetts, Buck Farms up in Mapleton. Yeah, so it was a great, great event and really just important to showcase what we can do here.
Yeah, no, and it was a delicious day too. When I went in, my first beer I saw, it was Bellflower Brewing, it's called Weathered Rake. It was a Vienna lager. And at first I thought, wow, I want a Vienna lager. I want a dark lager. I had a Northwoods. It was the Ox on Ice, a Dunkel lager. Those were my first two beers. And then that afternoon, John Hall of All About Beer walked in, and you know, he's Mr. Rauch Beer. He ordered the Norway Old Time Smokehouse. And for us who like beer styles, you know, this was the party. This was pretty awesome. You know, let's get Todd in and Tyler, and you guys talk about your relationship with Blue Ox and, you know, how long you've been working with craft malt, but also like how you work that into your operations, your brew day, as well as like why do you use craft malt? Because I know Matt, I mean, Todd, you serve the Tributary, your Pale Ale flagship, which is one of my favorite go-to beers. I didn't know that you were using craft malt all that time.
Yeah, well, so, you know, the thing is being a small brewery, you are a community-based brewery. And being a community-based brewery kind of enables you to utilize local ingredients. And when available, that's what you want to do. And, you know, you can use the big malting companies and save some money, but we found that, you know, the quality and the taste is what it really comes down to. And, you know, when you have a floor malted barley, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Joel, it's the Newdale.
You're not wrong. You are correct.
It makes for a very lovely base malt that has biscuity characters to it, and just true malt flavor. And we decided that, you know, it's our flagship. Let's run with it. And so I thought we started back in 14, but Joel was saying, no, I believe it was 16. So, and we've been working with them for, you know, a bunch of years now. So 7 years, and it's really remarkable to see their expansion. Ian sent me some pictures today of silos going on the pads, and it was really cool because, you know, this expansion is really happening, and that just makes me happy because we're going to see some different malts from Joel and the Blue Ox Company, which will be really, really interesting to see where they go.
Hey, Todd, for you as a longtime brewer, how has the evolution of craft malt been for you? I remember 10 years ago we did an event in New York with some craft malt, and a lot of the brewers, whether it was their equipment or they weren't used to dealing with, you know, different.
It can be a little prohibitive if, you know, the malt is under-modified. But these days, man, these guys are doing such an amazing job. They've got the science end of it, like, under control. And that is, you know, that's half the battle, is how well the malt is modified. You can get, it's amazing. We got some chit malt from Blue Ox that we threw into our Pilsner, and it just absolutely creates beautiful head retention, but we're also doing, you know, we're doing cold fermentations and we're spunding, which means we ferment under pressure, and we're doing it kind of the old fashioned way. And, you know, if we had the capacity to do decoction, we'd ask for under-modified malts so that we would have to actually utilize the decoction method. And there are those brewers that are still using fairly modified malts using decoction to get a very unique character. It's the melanoids that you get off of the decoction, and it's a flavor profile that you can't do with a stepped mash. And that's what we've been kind of doing, is we have the capacity to do stepped mashes, but we just can't actually decoct. So, you know, you utilize what equipment you have, and you communicate with your maltsters. And so we're very lucky to have Blue Ox right here. You know, Maine Malt House is doing some good malt as well. I don't know if there's any other maltsters here in Maine. Valley is doing a really great job. Andrea and Kristen are awesome, awesome maltsters. They need us to buy. I won't even go there, but they really would much more prefer to have us buy 500 pounds of malt at a time rather than, you know, 100 pounds of malt, of which we were using 25 pounds in our pail. And so we're kind of cheating using a different biscuit malt, but we're looking to Joel and Ian to kind of help us out with some biscuit malt.
Yeah, we're working on it. We're adding some new capacity. It'll be good. We'll get you there.
Looking forward.
Well, Joel, tell us a little bit more about the expansion. I mean, I actually first talked to you guys at Blue Ox 3 years ago when I first met Tyler as well. So it kind of goes hand in hand that you guys have been working together.
Yeah. Well, we've sort of been gently pushing up against our capacity for a few years now, and really know that we have not really tapped the potential for what craft malt can be in our region, including the farms that want to produce for us, the products we can produce. And our existing system has produced super well from us. We've really honed in floor malting, which, you know, early on, we definitely had some, I don't know, concern, I'd say, about the consistency you can get out of floor malting. But whatever method you use for malting, just like brewing, it's all about having control over, really, in malting, it's after grain selection, which is the most important part. It's all temperature and moisture. You're either trying to add it or reduce it. And whether it's floor malting or pneumatic malting, you can really, if you don't have those controls, you can't produce something consistently. And we've designed our floor malting with that in mind. And we interact with the malt every day. It's literally, you know, touched by hands, raked by hand every day, and we knew what we're doing. So we're expanding, and we're adding an additional, you know, 3.5 times more capacity than what we can currently do today with our existing system. And we're sticking with floor malting. So we're really happy with what we're doing. We're sticking with floor malting. Our existing system is going to allow us to play around a lot more with some of the things that Todd was mentioning. We're going to be able to play with new products because we'll have some freed up production space. We've added a roaster as well, which when that's up and running is going to allow us to really play around with products. And it's not even just the new products we can produce for breweries that's really exciting for me. It's also, this is going to allow us to work with more farms. Blue Ox Malt House has always been about trying to connect people with their food in the food systems. And I think people don't think about beer as food, but they should. It's an integral part of food and food systems. And farms that are producing grain for us and are growing grain for us are also growing grain for, you know, milling for bread or for oatmeal, or they're rotating it with potatoes for French fries or broccoli. So, you know, it's all part of the food system. And what this expansion is actually allowing us to do, funnily enough, is actually work with smaller farms and larger farms and play around with more varieties, play around with more styles. It's going to be really fun.
Wow, that's a great intro, Joel. And Tyler, with you, like, again, I said, you first introduced me to Blue Ox Malt 3 years ago. Talk about Lamplighter and the beers that you made that night, the beers you served and all that.
Yeah. We, I don't know when it was, maybe 3 years ago or so, maybe four, I'm not sure, that we first got introduced to Blue Ox, but immediately I was just kind of blown away by the quality and the fact that, like Joel said, they're four malting, which is just a wonderful hands-on old technique that just leads to really flavorful malt. So, you know, not only quality and consistency and flavor just really grabbed me at first, but, you know, this stuff is grown in Maine. We're supporting New England farmers and keeping our dollar in New England. And I think early on, we just started by new beers or one-off beers we would design around Blue Ox's malt. And then as the years went by, we started converting some of our core brands to be mostly, if not all, Blue Ox products. We just started using it here and there and really love the flavor profile, whether it's in, you know, a big hoppy beer or whether it's in a clean traditional style lager. The malt is just really wonderful. And it just, you know, not only is it a shorter supply chain and better carbon footprint, but like I said, we're, you know, supporting a New England economy. And it's like any food product, the fresher it is, the better it's going to taste. So compared to some of these German malts shipped over, and not saying that they're bad quality, they're great quality, but the freshness factor that you get with Blue Ox is unmatchable. I mean, it's right in our backyard. So
Tyler, you know, go through a couple of the beers that you're using, the Blue Ox malt in, and tell me what malt you're using and, you know, what it's doing for them. So I think one of your stouts, do you use Blue Ox malt in one of your stouts?
Yeah, we do. We just recently brewed a Dunkel Lager that we use Blue Ox, their Munich malt. We just did a collaboration with Remnant Brewing in Somerville. We brewed, we kind of jokingly called it a session Baltic Porter. but I think we're going to brand it like a chocolate lager instead. But that was kind of the idea that got us started. But we used a bunch of their Munich malts and some the Vienna malt. It's just, you know, our water profile in Cambridge leads us to produce wonderful hop, flavorful malty beer. And so whenever we use these fresh, dark, or flavorful biscuity malts, it just really shines. The beer that we sent up to the craft malt conference and Navarra Res, which we were all very proud of, and we were ecstatic to see it on tap at Navarra Res, because that's, you know, personally I've always held that bar in such high regard in terms of, you know, if you get on tap there, that's a sign that your that beer came out really well and you're doing a good job. So we brewed a German style root beer for it. It's a German red ale or red lager. I believe we branded it as an amber lager, but traditional style, just, you know, amber color. We used their Yankee Pils, as well as half Yankee Pils, half the Vienna, and some red malts from Germany and North America to kind of get that color and body. A little bit of Satz and Hauertau in there to give it that touch of noble hop character, but kept it around 5%. And just, you know, let the flavor of the malt really shine through everything else. Let the yeast get out of the way and really make this beer about the malt profile that made it so wonderful.
Oh, man, that's great. Hey, Todd, last time I was at Tributary, yeah, I'm thirsty too, man. Last time I was at Tributary, I talked with your son Woody, and your friend Horst Dornbusch was there. how has he influenced, talking about malts, you know, how has he influenced some of the beer styles that you're making at Tributary? I mean,
well, Horst always wants to do a collaboration with us just because he really loves to brew. And if he says, hey, I've got this idea, what do you say we do a Doppelbach? I'm like, cool, let's do a Doppelbach. And then he literally goes beyond all boundaries and decides to develop the recipe for us. And, but, you know, and then he comes and brews with us. He's an amazing beer scribe, and his history of beer is just absolutely phenomenal. It blows me away when he can just pull up these little facts and factoids about, oh yeah, the Rotbier, you know, it's a Franconian red lager. It's beautiful. And oh my God, it's just like, it's wild.
He talks more than that.
oh my God. He talks about the historical ramifications and why the dark malts were used and what malts were used and the water. He's incredible, but we've always loved collaborating with Horst, and he's quite the beer enthusiast. And he's down in Williamsburg now, Virginia, with I guess there's some historical brewery down there that he's playing around with the guys there. So he'll be
quite amazing when you go into your brewery. You never know who you're going to run into. I was curious though, like, because he has a lot of German recipes, does he usually prefer to use like Weyermann, the German malts, or?
Well, yeah, of course, of course, because he's got a rapport with the Weyermanns. They're really great friends, and anytime we can do a beer with them, with the Weyermann malts, he'll write a story and it will go into the New Brewer magazine. You know, he'll give you specs, he'll give you the recipe, he'll do everything. But he also gives the Weyermanns credit. So, you know, they get notoriety on the malts and stuff. What's really incredible is Ian came down and brewed with us about 2 weeks ago. We brewed a Vienna lager, Vienna-style lager, and we used the Vienna and a couple of Weyermann malts. But I think most of it was Blue Ox. And it has just, it's been performing really beautifully. It's, we just capped it today. I think it's at 2.9 total finishing gravity, started at 12.4, I think. And, so, you know, it's going to be a 6% beer, 5.5% beer. And, it's just showing really beautiful flavor profiles. And that this is all, you know, Joel's malting process. And we've done strictly Weyermann Vienna style lagers. And now we've done our first New England style Vienna lager. And we'll see how everybody takes it. The yeast is that typical 3470 lager yeast, fermented 48 degrees. It blows sulfur like you wouldn't believe. Place smells like a fart factory for a little while, but we thoroughly appreciate that yeast because it just is such a beautiful yeast strain. And you know, there are a lot of people that poo-poo the fermentous yeasts, but man, they're easy. They're really, really consistent. And we'll see. The beer is coming out. It's got another 4 or 6 weeks of lagering to deal with. So we'll continue this conversation in 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Invite me down to one of your Kayleys. I'll bring my fiddle and try the lager.
Yeah. You know what, Todd? You should have a little launch party. That would be fun.
Okay. We'll work on that.
You get Joel with his fiddle and I'll come up and I'd be up there. And now you got and Joel, Ian's there too. So Ian, it seems like you go around to these breweries and make a lot of fun with them.
Yeah, I've kind of got the sweet spot in beer industry jobs. I worked for Todd for many, many years, and he was my mentor and teacher in the industry. And that was where I first got introduced to working with Blue Ox and met Joel. And now Joel basically wants me to go around and play nice with all the brewers, which is not a hard thing to do.
Oh, man, I lucked out with Ian because, I mean, not only does he just have great training, having worked, you know, with Todd and then for so long, and then Todd sent him out in the world, and intellectually, I mean, Ian knows more about beer than I will ever know, or probably could ever know, because Ian is, I think, you know, like me, but in different ways, he's constantly learning, and he's so intellectually engaged. So anyway, he's always learning about beer, which means that I could never catch up with him. It's already way.
So Ian, what's your visit like when you go to see Todd, or when you go see Jeff at Northwoods? What how about this particular malt and a beer that you guys talked about? You know, do you assist them with the recipe development? What's your role as a malt?
Yeah, so both Northwoods and Tributary both have recipes that I helped write. Todd having a very heavy hand in that. And everybody knows me as a real German-focused lagerhead. So usually the conversation turns to real crisp, clean, traditional German brewing practices pretty much everywhere I go. It's kind of my bread and butter. When I go to Tributary or Northwoods in particular, they usually hand me a floor squeegee and tell me get to work.
So that's part of your job. I get it.
Yeah, I'm there to make the customers happy and make good friends. So if that's squeeging up their puddles, then that's what's up.
Yeah. So you were in Northwoods. What is there a malt you recommended? I want to hear like how you as the malt rep can interact with the brewer other than squeegees and helping them out, because I know that's part of it.
Yeah, so right now the product that I'm probably the most excited about is Triticale, which is a blend of rye and wheat that Blue Ox is malting. And it's not a cereal grain that you're typically going to find in any industry. So it's kind of a unique thing that Blue Ox has. It's got a really good graham cracker, sugar cookie flavor to it. And I've been suggesting that we put it in all sorts of beers across the board. I get to bring samples of malt with me when I talk to brewers, and it's been really fun munching on particularly the Triticale with the brewers and just brainstorming what beers and styles we think it could go into. Recently, a very small brewery in New Hampshire brewed a Triticale wine with that product, and it was a super fun brew day to check in on and see how that was going. It'll probably be a year before we get to try that beer, but we're real excited for it.
Yeah. You know, I only know, I feel like when I've had some oddball English beers that they might have listed a couple different grains. You mentioned Triticale. I know my friends from the old regional grains movement. That was one grain they've been talking about for 15 years. I think that grain's sexy, and I want to taste it. How do you guys feel about the different grains that you can use and the potential of different grains for flavor?
I think that is the opportunity of like craft malt. We are just like with craft beer, you know, craft brewers are creating more styles, more flavors in their beer than the big macro guys are, you know, because of their scale, because of their communities, because they're responding, you know, to local tastes and flavors. And like, we get to do the same thing. We get to take whatever farmers are growing in our area and try to highlight those in the best way and in the tastiest way possible. So whether it's working with Triticale and creating some, you know, delicious malt there, working with different varieties of wheat or different varieties of rye, we can really play around with it and and ideally and hopefully highlight that grain and what farmers are doing in our areas in the most tasty way possible. I mean, I think, I hadn't really vocalized it in this way, but when I first started working directly with Ian, I think he had a really great sort of analogy about the creation of culture. And I don't know if you want to like jump in, it's here, I'll butcher it. You can like talk just how like taking what you have locally, and you know, and I'm butchering it. You want to go? Want to like your whole like how do you create culture spiel?
Sure. So in my mind, culture has always been makers working with what they have. Doesn't matter what you're talking about or which culture you're talking about. It's how they have dealt with the raw materials that they have. So when you're using the cereal grains that grow in New England and we're malting them with the techniques and traditions we have, and brewers are using those local ingredients and their knowledge and their culture, this is how culture gets made. This is how a New England beer culture is defined. And it's just really cool to see all parts of that and be a part of all of that. And I think most of the brewers in New England and absolutely everybody in this conversation, I would say, feels that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The small craft brewer has that capacity and wherewithal to experiment. You know, big guys just can't experiment the way we do. You know, if we want to do a half batch at 7 barrels, if it goes south, well, shit, you know, that happens. But man, at least you've taken that risk to make something with something absolutely unique. And you know, it's just, it's up to us to really kind of experiment and push what our limits are with what we have or don't have.
Yeah, that's really the job of the craft brewer, I'd say, because when you're talking about brewing at scale or, you know, producing 100-barrel batch, there's so many things that inhibit you from getting creative, not only the risk of taking a new idea and just putting it into that volume and the cost, but, you know, you want to use some unique grain that might cost 20 extra cents per pound. Is someone at that larger brewery might say, we can't do that. That'll put us out of our price point to sell that beer. Or just, you know, getting big, unique flavors at that scale, like maybe the fermenter size and shape and the hydrostatic pressure is like, you know, you're dealing with something that's so much larger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the craft brewer's job to kind of be that avenue to do these really unique, flavorful beers. And, you know, have some opportunity to take risks and explore products from your backyard. I mean, that, Ian's 100% right. Like, that is how culture and civilization started. And, you know, we kind of got to get back to that in some way as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think just you started asking about, like, the grains and how we think about it. I mean, that's the opportunity that craft maltsters, whether it's us, you know, with everyone here or wherever your listeners are coming in, whoever their local craft maltster is, you know, that's the opportunity is we get to take what we have locally here available to us and experiment with it and create something new and different, you know, and, you know, as we all get a little bit more experienced and, you know, we're able to learn and mostly have successes, but we're able to take those risks, which, you know, large scale industrial malt houses just can't take. So it's a lot of fun to be able to support craft beer, you know, and doing that culture creation.
Oh, that's great.
It's kind of, I feel like it's a balance of both too. You know, we're in this globalized world now, so it's celebrating these cultures as well as your own and defining your own. And we are actually packaging next week, speaking of alternative grains, we brewed a millet wine Millet being a staple grain in some parts of the world, and you know, not a traditional brewing grain, but we found a malt house that malts millet, and we bought and designed a recipe. We aged it in barrels for about a year. We used some Tanzanian miombo honey in it, and we kind of started this idea. One of my suppliers who sources honey from around the world, which is a whole nother podcast on itself, the world of honey. But we kind of said, like, hey, let's celebrate and focus this whole concept around Tanzanian culture. So we brewed this 100% millet beer, aged it in barrels, brewed it with Tanzanian honey. And we, for the last month, we've been aging it on Tanzanian vanilla beans as well. And it's this really cool, big malty aroma, bunch of vanilla, but because of the nature of millet, it's very dry too. And it's got millet, this really
gluten-free
millet. Yeah. So millet is gluten-free. So the malt house we got it from, is kind of their primary customer is the gluten-free brewer. So it's a little weird when I was talking to them, like, well, this is what you, I'm like, I don't, this is not going to be gluten-free. Like, I'm sorry, but like, we don't have the capabilities to say this is gluten-free.
Right.
So we were doing it for another reason. So it's this very dry, full flavored beer. And we just carved it up yesterday, and we gave it like a really, you know, higher carb level to let the body and malt shine and, you know, push the boundaries a little bit, but really cool beer, celebrating culture, but also experimenting with unique grains and, you know,
that's awesome.
Taking a risk. Yeah.
Very cool.
Wow. Well, tell you, we're off to a great start. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin, the state of cheese, makes half of the nation's specialty cheese and wins more awards than any other state or country. Our heritage and traditions, master cheesemaker program, and the American propensity for innovation all put Wisconsin on the cutting wedge of cheesemaking. With over 600 varieties of cheese to choose from and 5,500 national and international awards and counting, get ready to turn your refrigerator into a trophy case. Enjoying a Wisconsin cheese is basically like winning a gold medal in culinary achievement. Set your mind at cheese. When you bite into a wedge of Wisconsin Wonderful, you know it is made with the ultimate skill and passion possible. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This week we're closing out our 2023 season. We'll be back in January 2024 for our 15th year of Beer Sessions Radio and the 15th anniversary of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Support us and become a member, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So we're doing the follow-up to earlier this year. We were at Novare Res in Portland, Maine for the Craft Malt Conference, and the beer list was unbelievable. It was all New England breweries that used regional malt, and Joel from Blue Ox Malt was a big part of that. So, Joel, thanks very much for joining me today. And a shout out to Emily Hudo at Radcraft Beer, a great beer PR person who helped coordinate the show today. Joel, but back to the beers at Novare Res that day. We went through a couple of them, but I know that you made a beer with Northwoods. And unfortunately, Jeff at Northwoods is way up in the North Country. And the internet ain't working today. So tell us about that beer you guys made. Northwoods, Blue Ox, Ox on Ice, the Dunkel Lager,
yeah.
And what your malt contribution was as well. So,
well, as far as I, you know, so the Ox on Ice was a Dunkel Lager, and was definitely one of my go-to beers that weekend of the Craft Malt Conference. Just as you know, that you know, I'm a lager malt kind of guy, and it's nice to just have that kind of bread character, the dark, smoky, kind of sweet, crusty character. I kind of think like graham crackers is kind of like a s'more lager. It's not really s'more, but I don't know. You know, it's not so much like the coffee chocolate, but a little chocolate, but not so much the coffee, but you get that in a nice crisp lager. It's great. So our malt contribution to that, I believe, was our Yankee Pilsner and our Dark Munich. I think that was the entire grain bill of what went into that beer. So it the beer really did highlight, you know, the kind of like, you know, bready character of our malts and the kind of toasted bread crust and caramelly notes of our Dark Munich, which are two of my favorite malts. And
I'm pretty sure that when I got there, that was what jumped out at me, seeing a Dunkel Lager made with regional malts. And I remember I had a few of those. You guys brewers, Todd and Tyler, I'm an amateur, but I drink a lot. What's the difference when you make a Dunkel Lager instead of a lager? And guys, we're talking about lagers. This is really a lager show because everyone's talking about how much people drink lagers, and I like lagers too, but I like some lagers with color. Dunkel lagers, Todd and Tyler.
Well, so we have a Tmavé Leja, which is a dark Czech style lager, and it's an amber beer. It's not a stout. It's not a black beer, but it has so much character, and it's 4.8 by volume. You can drink this. I call it my Coca-Cola because you can drink this stuff like water. It's just beautiful. The Schwarzbier is a little different. It's got a little more body to it, a little more roast character, but the roast character is like subdued. It's not like a stout. And Tyler was talking about the Rote beer, and man, that's such a cool beer style that nobody makes, but they call it an amber lager.
Yeah.
Because if you call it a Rote beer, they're like, what the hell's a Rote beer? You know? And, so, you know, the cool thing about the dark lagers are that they just have so much more character to them. And again, all these beers take time. And that's what I love about the craft brewers is they take the time. You know, all the guys making these hazy New Englands, you know, there's a lot to be said about them. But I just find them to be just very short-sighted. They tend to go in and come out in, you know, 14 days. And I always, and you know, I've got my degree in ceramics, and it's all about time and temperature and recipe formulation and chemistry and a little bit of magic. And when you make beer, it's really about letting the natural rhythm do its thing. And lagers take time. That's all there is to it. And the longer you let them sit, the better they get. Man, the triglycerides break down, and the beer just becomes this beautiful, velvety love fest. And, you know, I think the dark lagers are just that, you know, point in point. It's such a beautiful beer style that not a lot of people make. And, you know, Tyler, take it from there.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the Dunkel is just like the perfect beer for the malt lover. You know, the lager yeast is doing its job. It's fermenting, you know, the sugars, it's creating the ethanol, it's creating all kinds of other flavors, but for the most part, it's getting out of the way. So if you want a beer that's drinkable and full of flavor, but just not a slap in the face of flavor, you know, the Dunkel Lager is the perfect beer to just showcase wonderful malt. You're focusing on really letting it kind of shine. And I like Todd was saying with the New England IPAs and stuff, or hazy, juicy IPAs, like, I don't know. The analogy I've been making over the years is like, it flavor wise, it's like being, you know, absolutely just belted in the face with flavor, and it's big, it's sweet. But you know, there's something to be said for traditional beer styles and why they've been around for so long. And lighter, easygoing beers is it's nuance. It's that gentle, caressing touch, and it's not the like being, you know, forehanded across the face. It's much more delicate, and it's still full of flavor, but it's drinkable, and it's got plenty of character. We do a Dunkel as well with Blue Ox's Yankee Pilsner and their Dark Munich. And man, that's a wonderful beer. We look forward to brewing it every year. And it's definitely one of the staff favorites because, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing like a clean Dunkel lager where you can just celebrate malt character.
And then for you guys, Todd and Tyler, why should I go into your tap rooms and drink the beer on draft instead of just buying cans somewhere? My go-to is when I go to Novare Res, I know I'm going to have great beers on draft, the selection, the styles, but it's also the mouthfeel. It's like the beer tastes better when I'm in a good pub or tap house.
So, you know, when you put beer in a can, you're taking a chance. A, the can is clean. B, it's been purged correctly. C, it's been sealed, seamed correctly. Mm-hmm. And draft beer, God, it's literally, it goes from the bright tank into the keg. And, you know, and then it's kept cold. You never know where your cans go. You know, sometimes they store them warm, sometimes they store them cold. We've always set a precedent. We would love our cans to be kept cold. But, you know, a bunch of these places, they've got so much beer that, you know, they can't keep everyone cold. And so, you know, sometimes they end up on the floor. And, you know, I just I've always found draft beer to be really superior to any product, unless it's bottle conditioned. And then, you know, bottle conditioned has just a beautiful liveliness to it. It's incredible. But we just, when you come here, there's always going to be a fairly good selection of ales and lagers ranging from lightest to darkest. And, you know, you just got to take a chance on your draft.
We got to come up and do a session when you launch that new beer. What was the beer you were talking about that's coming out in four?
The Vienna.
We got to come up for that.
It's 4 to 6 weeks, and I'll definitely key Ian into it because he's going to be the first one to drink it. I know that.
And then while I get you, Todd, before we go back to Ian, Todd, you know, we've talked before about your Mop the Lesser, but just from you, the maker, that recipe, what is it? What's Mop the Lesser? And are you using any Blue Ox malts in that?
Name a malt and it's in that beer.
All you have to do is name one and it's in there. it's a plethora of malts, and it's a kind of ridiculous. I think there's something like 16 different malts in it.
We have a beer that people called Dr. Pepper because they joke there's 27 different flavors.
27. Exactly.
So 16 malts. I mean, I know you've done it for a long time, Todd, but really, it took 16 malts to get that flavor.
Well, yeah. And, you know, you can use a whole lot less, but you won't get the dimension that you get off Mop the Lesser. We had a lactic incursion in one of our barrels that we didn't really notice until after it was packaged. So all the Mop that is out there right now has been recalled. And unfortunately, one of the barrels just went south on us. And but Mott is it's an imperial stout. It's just big, burly. The batch we have in now, which will come out in April, has, I think it starts at 26 degrees Plato and goes to 7. So, you know,
it's that's just a big beer.
It's huge. It's 10.5% by volume.
I have Mott the Lesser that I got the time I interviewed Woody. It might have been a year ago.
Yeah.
So it's probably from 2 years ago. That was pretty great. And then Ian, for you, sorry, one sec. Just, you know, I want to get Ian in here again because you've brewed with Todd. Name one or two of the malts. We don't want to blow the whole recipe, but It's got to be one or two that you're proud of that's in that beer.
See how to answer this one. I was like, do I name the malts you can't find anymore or the malts from us? Have a good backbone, like a pale ale malt that's going to have all of the enzymatic power you need, all of the conversion to just really carry the rest of everything along. I think a lot of people don't realize, a lot of consumers don't realize that even when you have a dark beer, pale malts are often the backbone of those beers. And all of the rest of that color and flavor are coming from a handful of specialty malts. And I think the base malts get overlooked oftentimes in those big beers.
Right.
Yeah. One of my mentors back in the day used to kind of teach me when it came to recipe development or just malt flavor is just, you know, the idea of layering malts and, you know, layering flavors. So you might use a little bit of a lighter crystal to get those toffee notes or something, but then you might go to a medium or darker crystal to get those deeper raisin notes. And, you know, you can get such beautiful bouquet of malt flavors when you layer these malts and you use a little bit of this or more of that and getting the balance right and including some chocolate or maybe some pale chocolate or, you know, getting color and flavor without the acrid bitterness too. Yeah. I mean, it's like every choice on the spectrum of malt flavor is considered. And it's like, oh yeah, you definitely want some roasted barley in this stout or something, but you know, maybe you'll split it a little bit. If it's a lighter stout, maybe you'll split it a little bit with some carafa, and that way you can kind of ease the end, you know, tannic bitterness or something. That, you know, there's all every end of the spectrum you're making a decision. And I think at the end of the day, when it comes to brewing or just general beer styles or just coming up with a new concept, every brewer has to be able to envision what that finished beer tastes like, you know, before it's even created, because you have to have a goal in mind and you have to make your decisions around designing that recipe with that goal in mind so that you can achieve that flavor profile that you want to get.
Right. No question.
You know, Tyler, to your credit, it might have been two falls ago. I was sitting in the tap room at the original tap room in Cambridge where your brewery is. And I think you had your fresh hop beer out, and I had it on draft. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite beers of the fall. What's your malt makeup on that?
Yeah, that's a fun beer to make. We call it a harvest ale. Malt wise, it's sort of like what you would do for a Vienna lager almost. It's biscuity, it's malty, it's a little toasted. It's a little bit of caramel flavor as well to give it a little body, which, you know, what we're going for there is a celebration of not only malt flavor, but this fresh hop flavor as well. It's kind of like a slightly maltier pale ale in a way. Malt wise, it's Blue Ox malt. I could look up the recipe right now, but, it's definitely something that we love to brew every year. It's a little confusing for the consumer because it's like, what is a harvest ale, you know? But it's a bunch of Yankee pills, some Vienna, some of their light Munich, and then a touch of just different caramel malts here and there. And, you know, we hop it in the kettle to get the kind of, you know, balance right with the malt profile that we're going for. And then we hit it with an absurd amount of wet hops from Four Star Farms in Massachusetts. And it's always a fun beer to make because, you know, in years past, what we would do is, you know, Simon, our head brewer back in the day, would mash in. I'd get in the van, drive out. And by the time he was ready to go into the whirlpool, I'd be coming back with just 400 pounds of wet hops. And, you know, it's fun for everybody.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
The surprise, I guess, which was most welcome to be here is Todd. And it's really great. This lineup is great. Joel, just to recap the show, it was Craft Malt Conference. We've been in the works for a few years. We're in Portland, Maine. What did it take for you and your team to line up all those beers? I know that Navarre Res was on board. Because you even had, there was a beer from Maine Brewing, Maine Beer. There was a Abyssal beer. There was an Allagash beer.
Well, you know, I think one, you know, at the Craft Brewers Conference, I did a presentation with Jacob Buck from Maine Malt House. And, you know, the purpose of that session was to talk about what's happening in Maine. Like, you know, how have we been able to do craft malt here? And I think, you know, with Lamplighter being an exception, a lot of these breweries that were on tap were from Maine. Oh, and of course, I was talking about Northwoods. You know, so what I think we have here in the Northeast is a really amazing, supportive brewing community that gets the importance of utilizing shorter, more local supply chains and supporting their farmers and their communities. And that's kind of backing into the answer, which is how are we able to do this? We're able to do this because, you know, we work with over 100 breweries, over 120 breweries every year. The majority of those are in the Northeast. You know, we've worked in one way or another with all of the breweries on this list. So they're all excited about craft malt. They're all excited about supporting farming in their community, about supporting their community. It wasn't as difficult as you might think to get people excited to do an event like this where they can really highlight the products that they're going to make with local ingredients. So, you know, I think, you know, there was, as far as my team pulling it together, certainly, you know, we're months ahead. So we certainly were reaching out in the fall leading up to it, trying to get this on people's radar, make sure people know, but saying yes and getting people excited about putting something out for this event wasn't the difficult part. We just had to, show up and let them know about it.
And it just it helped that you had Navarre Res right downtown. So,
yeah,
for me, that was my dream. That was my dream beer day. That was the best beer list of the year. And I'm gonna. Ian, do you want to say anything else about the dream beer list before I ask? Get into the trenches with Todd and Tyler to close it out.
No, I think this is a great looking list. It's always great when you see a beer list that has different styles from different regions and isn't just all loaded out with one kind of beer. You know, I'm seeing German beers, Belgian beers, English beers, American beers on this list, and that's just fantastic.
Ian, there's two we didn't mention. The Norway, they had an old-time smokehouse, but where's Norway Brewing?
So Norway Brewing is in Western Maine, and they used our smoked malt for that. And Charlie's doing a great job over there. It gets really creative, big fan of local ingredients, and is doing some really interesting stuff over there.
And Bellflower did the Vienna Lager, the Weathered Rake. Where's Bellflower?
So Bellflower is right in downtown Portland.
That's great. That was a really great way to introduce all the attendees to so many of these great breweries. So thank you. Let's close it out with the trenches. So before, when we were waiting to get on the recording, Todd and Tyler, you guys talked about your brew days. Let's just give us a glimpse. What was the catastrophe for you today, Todd, and for you, Tyler, which is part of the normal brew day, I'm sure.
Well, you know, a normal brew day, you start at a certain time and you expect you're going to be done in 6.5 to 8 hours, depending on the what style you're brewing. And we started mashing in at about 8:30, and our grist hydrator backed up on us. And we have two drops for our grist hydrator. And the first one backed up. The second one just started filling this bucket that we put behind it just to, you know, in case it overflows. And we just shut down and figured out what was going on. And we think the grist hydrator had been a little bit wet and the grain bound up in it and then backed up into the auger. And, it took 10 minutes to clean up, and there was a bunch of spent grain all over the place, and or not spent grain, it was fresh grain. But, shit happens, and you move forward.
All right, and Tyler, you had another issue with the drains, huh?
Yeah, I mean, every week there's always something that's going to surprise you. You know, brewing's one of those things where you could go into it thinking it's going to be smooth sailing, but whether it's a pump failing here or something like that, there's always going to be something that kind of, you know, makes your day exciting.
Rose a curveball.
Yeah, yeah. But today it was our trench drain got backed up. Something must have fallen down there and we didn't have the trap in, and so all of a sudden like it starts overflowing and we just have to kind of stop, make sure we get at it and clear that blockage and, you know, get really dirty in the process. That and like a couple hours later, Simon found the boiler wasn't kicking on, and did some electrical inspection and realized that the pilot light wire had been cooked, and so we had to replace the pilot light on the boiler. And it's crazy. Like, you know, you meet people from all different backgrounds in this industry, and it's very much like, yeah, you're a part-time chemist, plumber, electrician. You just got to be able to put on whatever hat's necessary for the day. Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. I really want to thank you guys so much. Joel, Ian, Todd, and Tyler, thanks so much for joining me. Shout out to Jeff from Northwoods who couldn't get online. And big thank you to Emily at Ragcraft Beer for helping to put the show together. Once again, my favorite beer list of 2023 was the Blue Ox Malt Regional Craft Malt Beers at Novari Res last March 2023. So great job, guys. And thanks to Armin Spengen, our engineer. This is our final show of 2023. Happy holidays. And I want to say, this is the way to end the year. We're talking about great beers made with regional malts, styles that I love to drink. And I'm going to throw in that night at Novari Res, there was also Sacred Profane, had one of their Czech black lagers on. So I was in Portland for 3 days, and I was at Novari Res for 3 days in a row. So that was pretty good. And then we got a lot more shows coming up in 2024 about things like, I was in Copenhagen. We did three shows in Copenhagen. One of them is a kind of food waste brewer who was going to tell you things about equipment and brewing with barley and other things. We've got some cool shows coming up. Big thanks again. This was our 14th year. We'll be back January 2024 and our 15th year on Beer Sessions Radio. Thanks so much, guys. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Congratulations on 14 years.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.